This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On this week's episode, we conclude the two-part series of Dr. Laura Verner's. But first, Anne Guptill offers a training tip on the benefits of lunge lessons. Hello, Anne, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Well, you've got another tip for us this week, and it involves lunging, doesn't it?
Yes, use of seat lessons on the lunge to improve the rider's seat.
Right, something that maybe not everybody looks forward to if they've spent a lot of time without stirrups, but we know that it's good for us, right?
It is. It's absolutely, because you can take away the element of the horse and the rider controlling the horse, the trainer, the instructor is controlling the horse on the line, and that just frees up the rider to have more time to just feel and think about the feel rather than having to control the horse. Of course, it has to be a very steady horse with good rhythm, of good size, that carries the saddle well and gives good dressage movement, so that the exercises when the rider's seat is in place, that the rider can develop the feel that they want on their own horse.
Right, so where would you suggest people start?
To find a good instructor for lunging, I can certainly recommend any USDF certified instructor. They have to pass seat lessons lunging the rider in order to be a certified instructor, but instructors who have good lunge line horses and can give good seat lessons are very valuable, especially to the rider starting out who's not learned about a dressage seat, but it can also be very helpful for a rider who may have developed any bad habits or crookednesses so that they can develop that without the effect of the horse underneath them.
Right. So once you found the instructor, then take us through this.
Okay, if the instructor has a very good lunge horse, and those can be hard to find or hard to keep, it takes a special horse that doesn't mind having the rider on the circle for 30 minutes. It takes a bit of strain on the horse to be on the circle that amount of time, and the horse has to be patient and quiet as the rider works with and without stirrups, arm circles, turning their torso, adjusting, shifting their weight, and that the horse stays steady. So the good lunge horse is very valuable. Some riders have been able to use their own horses with their instructor on the lunge line, their own horse. So sometimes if the instructor doesn't have a lunge horse or the lunge horse may be fully booked, they may be able to explore doing it on their own horse. Then would you like me to describe the seat lesson?
Yes, please.
Okay. The riders will start with stirrups, and if it's an instructor they know or do not know, they need to work through understanding what they should do should the horse spook or become nervous. They can then, the reins are held in a way that they can still access them if they should need to stop the horse should anything happen. And then those basic stretching exercises are done first for the instructor to be able to see how the rider is equally left and right, and to be able to see them back and back to front as well as left to right. So they need to look at them briefly from both directions. It's helpful if they have someone stand in front of the horse and hold the horse, that they may go around and look at the horse, the rider, from the front and the back as well, because symmetry left and right as well as back to front balance is important. So you're looking at the rider's vertical balance as well as their lateral balance and vertical alignment as well as their lateral position. And riders who are looking to go to the show ring, these are things that are going to be looked at by the judge. And if they look at how the rider test, the USEF rider test, specifically about the use of the seat and body alignment, and then in the last test cycle of the USEF regular test, more emphasis was given to rider scores. So it is helpful for the rider to understand how their seat affects the horse and what the judge is looking at when they're assessing the rider's seat in a test as well. After the suppling exercises are done and the instructor can assess the rider, it's a good idea then to go to some work without stirrups. as long as the rider is safe and comfortable, but they can develop a little more feel through their seat and independence of their seat without the irons. And again, so lessons are taken step by step depending on the level of the rider, depending on the suitability of the horse, how many exercises can be done. But the development is to allow the rider to find their seat through the use of the exercises. The exercises should loosen them and help them find alignment and help them find a better balance.
And to develop an independent seat so they're always over the center of balance, right?
Yes, center of balance, yes. Center of gravity, center of balance, correct. So that if the horse, and then when the rider is comfortable and loose, the instructor can do transitions on the lunge as well, developing their seat and watching their seat in transition so they don't have to stay just in the exercises and the straight work with or without the stirrups, but then if transitions are done to help the rider with timing of transitions in the test, because another very important thing in any level test are how the transitions are ridden and the horse's balance and submission in those transitions.
And how long would you recommend these sessions would be for, Anne?
30 minutes is usually the maximum, and a lot, the beginning of that is done in walk and the assessment of the rider's position. But a good 20-minute workout, it's a great workout. The rider should feel when they get off the horse that they're loose, they're limber, they're supple, they're ready to go ride. And sometimes they might have to work to the point where those certain muscles that may have been crooked or holding too much get a little bit tired. So they may feel a little bit different soreness the next day, but it should be a good sore as you do from any good workout, whether it's on the horse or off the horse or anything that you do that's complementary to your riding, any cross training. You know, lunge line seat lessons can be considered some cross training to your regular riding because you should work on that core stability as well.
And how often would you recommend, I'm sure this depends on the level of that rider, but if this was to become a habit, how often would you recommend it?
It would be a great habit to have, and I would say for an experienced rider, a once-a-month check-in would be super. I know it's not very often possible with the types of horses that instructors have access to. The beginning rider should be started on the lunge line and then return to the lunge line periodically as they learn to develop, say, the sitting trot or then if they move up they're in training level and learning to develop the sitting trot, I would try to do it once a month. And then when they're moving up from training to first level, anytime there's a change in the level of ride that they're trying to produce from their horse, I think it's a good idea for a check-in. It's always good to have eyes on the ground in this sport because we can't always see what the raw person on the ground can see. So then taking the element of your own horse out of it lets you just address what your own position needs work with. And I found often you get much more improvement in the rider's own horse when they then return after the lunge lesson. Or it's another feel for body awareness, too.
What about bareback versus with a saddle without stirrups?
Okay, it'll be a different balance. If you look at where a rider sits when they sit bareback, they're much more weight-bearing on the horse's back. We saw that in a lecture from Dr. Clayton this winter on difference between of the weight seat-bearing weight done with a thermographic imaging of a rider bareback and with a saddle. And bareback is a great way and fun way to ride, but it is different than where you will sit, where you're with the saddle. You'll sit a little bit above the horse, still in the center of balance with the horse's center of balance, but a little bit above the horse, and which allows for more freedom of the horse's back than it does when you sit directly on the horse. Of course, if you have a good fitting saddle.
And the luxury of stirrups or not?
On the lunge lessons, it's a very good to start. We will start with stirrups and then work without. But then it's a good thing to go back to. So you do your initial warm-up without the stirrups, then do some seat work, transition work without the stirrups, then go back to the stirrups to make sure that the rider can find the new balance or new position that they gained on the lunge when they take the stirrups back, especially if it was a rider that was at all braced on the irons or using the irons for balance or support. So if they go back, take the stirrups back, and make sure that their seat can be just as fluid once they've taken the irons back. And that will help them in the transition back to their own horse also.
And something for riders of all levels, Anne.
Yes, very good to have a check-in at any level because if we ride on your own, it's hard to not develop habits that are not as helpful to the horse. It's hard to not be crooked one direction or the other, because we all are and all the horses are. It's how we address that and feel it.
Great. Well, thank you very much indeed for that. And we really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show and offer some advice there for lunge lessons. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
We now conclude the two-part series on equine emergencies by Dr. Laura Werner that was recorded at an education session during the 2013 Adequan USDF annual convention.
So choke is another emergency that we'll talk about that's common, is obstruction of the esophagus. And you'll often see, oftentimes we think of choke as food has gone down our trachea, okay, and we can't breathe. But when horses choke, it's generally that something is stuck in their esophagus. And so this occurs commonly with pelleted feeds or some of those large chunk type of feeds that we see, horse treats, carrots. Sometimes they'll find a corn cob and eat it. And these are really common in older horses that don't have the best teeth anymore, or in younger horses that just have had poor dental care and can't chew their feed as well. So you'll see signs of the horse hypersalivating. You'll often see feed and water coming out of both the nose and the nostrils. And some horses may actually exhibit signs of colic as well, or other distress. They will throw themselves on the ground. They will try to roll to try to relieve this obstruction. So again, what to do about it? Obviously, call your veterinarian, and you want to take away the horse's feed and water. Sometimes they can resolve on their own, but you want to place the horse in a quiet, unbedded stall to see if they can relax and pass it on their own. So left untreated for a prolonged time, though, they can aspirate all the stuff that's coming out of their nose and mouth. They can aspirate that to lungs and sometimes develop severe pneumonia, or else it can damage the esophagus from something being stuck in there for so long. So next, obviously, horses can get into lots of trouble, as we probably all know, in a padded room or wherever. So just trauma and lacerations, what to have on hand. I recommend the cotton or the sheet cotton bandaging, okay, in several rolls of those. An elastic bandage such as Elasticon and or Vet Wrap, okay, that's stretchy material that can put pressure on the horse. And the Elasticon is good because it can stick to the horse's skin or hair. Tape or duct tape, obviously we can fix a lot of things with duct tape. Those are really important as well, too, when it comes to bandaging, especially in the foot area. I'd recommend some antiseptic soap, such as betadine soap. And a twitch is always a good thing to have on hand, too. Sometimes these horses, obviously, when they're in pain, they react out. And so sometimes a twitch, if you don't have sedation or access to sedation, or sometimes it's better to not administer it, you know, again, without your veterinarian directing you or seeing it when these sometimes these cases. But a twitch is a great thing to have on hand to use to restrain the horse. And in a pinch, it can also be used as a splint, too. So some of those long twitches like we have are actually pretty handy. Okay. Trauma and lacerations. So we want to evaluate hemorrhage. Okay. So I always try to have your client describe how fast, how many drops per second. Is there a grapefruit size or a watermelon size pool on the ground? This will help. Horses obviously are a lot larger than us. They can lose a lot of blood, but hemorrhage is serious, but we don't want to, we don't need to overreact, because again, they can lose a lot more blood than us. And also when they're excited, their blood pressures increase and they'll just often use more blood. So, and then you want to describe too, what structures are involved. So is it around the fetlock joint? Is there a tendon sheath? Is it near one of the tendon sheaths? Is there exposed bone, such as in this case? Again, what to do. So if it's over a joint, a tendon sheath, or there's bone exposed, or there's a puncture in the foot, call your vet immediately. Okay. You want to gently clean around the wound or apply a bandage if possible. There is serious gross contamination. So some of these guys obviously are covered in mud or shavings. It is still good to remove that gross contamination. And sometimes we do that with water and a garden hose with a small amount of pressure to remove any of the gross contamination. And obviously, if the wound is serious, consider a possible referral of that case. What seems daunting or doesn't seem repairable oftentimes is so. And then another thing, nail punctures in the foot or wire is another fairly common equine injury. the first thing, obviously, try not to remove the nail, okay? I know it seems counterintuitive. Oftentimes, these horses aren't putting any weight on the leg, but you don't want to remove the nail, okay? Obviously, call your veterinarian. Try to describe what part of the foot that the nail seems to puncture. So does it puncture at the tip of the frog, at the heel, at the toe? This will help us determine how serious the injury is and recommend possible referral. Obviously, if any of the structures are punctured, that is a much more severe case. So epistaxis is defined as bleeding from the nostrils, okay? Again, there's many different causes. More often than not in the horse, the most common is trauma. So they will hit their head, they get kicked in the head, and that's the most common things. But there are other more serious conditions that can cause this epistaxis. So generally, it's a lot easier to diagnose the problem when the bleeding's occurring. Okay, so if it is, you know, not associated with exercise or some other event that you know of, that there's visible trauma on the horse, I would call your veterinarian to examine the horse at the time while it still shows sign of bleeding. Keep the horse quiet, again, to try to decrease the blood pressure and decrease the amount of bleeding. And again, describe whether it's coming out one side, one nostril in particular, or both nostrils. And also describe whether it's frank blood or it's mixed with some mucus. And again, try to realistically quantitate the amount. And so some cases are very serious and life-threatening, and that's why not to be taken lightly, okay? And then respiratory distress. And obviously, horses have to breathe through their nostrils. So you want to observe for any increased effort, noise. Sometimes these horses will act distressed. Again, they may even exhibit signs of colic, throwing themselves on the ground. You know, they can be quite dramatic. Anytime there's severe swelling of the head, or even if the horse has just a case of hives, but they're starting to get worse, and if these hives are located around the horse's nose or face area, this is an emergency situation where you should call your veterinarian. Try to check the gum color and the air flow through both nostrils, as we described earlier. And try to keep the horse quiet and its head raised, as that will help, okay? Reproductive emergencies. So, again, we'll go over a little bit what's normal. So, normal birth, the water generally breaks about 10 to 30 minutes before the birth. Generally, a stage 2 labor or hard labor should only last about 20 to 30 minutes. And you should first see the foal's feet and then its head, okay? A dystocia is described as any difficult labor or abnormal presentation of the foal. A dystocia is when hard labor exceeds for 20 to 30 minutes and is non-productive, or if there's an abnormal position of the foal. Another form of dystocia is a red bag, and that's caused by premature separation of the placenta. You'll often see, you may see also something called the cervical star. It really looks like a white-colored star on this red velvety background. And you have to open that immediately to extract the foal. Otherwise, the foal is not getting oxygen with that premature separation of the placenta. And retained placenta is obviously when the placenta is not passed within 3 to 4 hours after the birth of the foal. You should also make sure the entire placenta is present. And we'll often lay it out to see if the whole thing is intact. And another good trick, there's going to be usually, obviously, one hole in it where the foal came out. But a good trick to make sure that the whole placenta is present and that there's not any large holes or defect in it is to take a garden hose and fill that placenta up and see if it retains water. If the placenta has not passed, or if large parts of it are missing, or if the placenta looks abnormal, I would call your veterinarian. So complications of retained placenta obviously can be a really severe uterine infection and or founder or laminitis. So again, you want to get this condition treated pretty quickly. It's also important if the horse hasn't passed the placenta immediately after birth to try to tie it up with the twine. That'll keep the mare from stepping on it and tearing it any further. And sometimes just the weight of tying it up and having that ball of the placenta will help pull it out slowly. Okay. And again, usually when your veterinarian examines the horse after birth, they'll examine the placenta too. But it's just good to kind of know for you to look at it first. And that way you'll know whether or not there's a problem sooner than later. So a normal foal should be normal size, so not too small, not too large, should have erect ears that stand up, and it should be able to hold its head up fairly quickly. should be very active. They'll often make attempts to stand within the first 10 minutes, and they should be up standing within about 2 hours after foaling. They should have a suckle reflex within about the first 20 minutes. And initially, their heart rate can be a little slower, 50 to 70 beats per minute, but then it'll rise generally to 100 or so within the first hour. So when to call your vet? Obviously, if the foal is weak or depressed, if they don't attempt to stand within the first hour or so, or they're unable to nurse within the first 2 hours, remember it's important for them to get their first immune protection from the mare's milk within this short period of time. Also, if the foal shows any signs of colic, if they're straining to urinate or defecate, or if they haven't passed their feces or meconium within the first 6 hours, these are all abnormal. Eye trauma is also definitely a big emergency in the horse. Most commonly, they'll exhibit signs of squinting, tearing. You might see some swelling around the eyelid or reluctance for the horse to open the eye, especially in the sunlight. Again, with any eye trauma, I would call your veterinarian immediately. Corneal ulcers can be devastating if left untreated or treated improperly. They can lead to loss of the eye, and these eyes can be very expensive to treat if not treated right from the start, and they're very labor intensive. And again, to save the horse's eye, it's a huge emergency. I wouldn't just treat any medication in the eye. I would do so under the direction of your veterinarian and have your veterinarian out immediately to look at the eye. The other thing is the eyelid structures themselves need to be intact. So if there is a laceration involving the eyelid, that needs to be established quickly again for the horse to have use of its eye and be able to blink and protect itself properly. So again, if there's a laceration involving the eye, it's important to get that addressed immediately.
And a reminder that all of the USDF podcasts are available for download on iTunes. Don't forget to visit eTrack, the USDF's online learning center and resource for dressage and equine education, at usdf.org. The USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.